We're on page number 49 of the lesson book. Tonight we'll be studying in Acts chapter 5, beginning with verse 17, all the way through chapter 6, verse 7. And I don't expect we'll get past about probably question 9 or 10 tonight. And this is one of the neat stories, one of the encouraging stories of the Bible that starts to illuminate how you see God working to make sure that His Word is spread, how He's working to make sure His Word continues through His servants, which He has chosen. And we begin to see the we've already been studying and seeing a little bit of the persecution of the New Testament church. And it seems like this is the launching point for where we'll see it ratcheted up a little bit as we go through the book, or at least parts of the book of Acts. As our custom has been, let us read part of the scripture tonight. Acts chapter 5, beginning with verse 17. We'll read through about verse 29. Does anyone want to volunteer to read? All right, thank you.
Okay, then the high priest rose up and all they that were with him, which is the sect of the Sadducees, and were filled with indignation, and laid their hands on the apostles and put them in the common prison. But the angel of the Lord by night opened the prison doors and brought them forth and said, "Go stand and speak in the temple to the people all the words of this life." And when they had heard that, they entered into the temple early in the morning and taught. But the high priest came, and they that were with him, and called the council together, and all the senate and the children of Israel, and sent to the prison to have them brought. But when the officers came and found them not in the prison, they returned and told, saying, "The prison truly found we shut with all safety, and the keepers standing without before the doors. But when we had opened, we found no man within." Now when the high priest and the captain of the temple and the chief priests heard these things, they doubted of them whereunto this would grow. Then came one and told them, saying, "Behold, the men whom ye put in prison are standing in the temple and teaching the people." Then went the captain with the officers and brought them without violence, for they feared the people lest they should have been stoned. And when they had brought them, they set them before the council, and the high priest asked them, saying, "Did not we strictly command you that ye should not teach in this name? And behold, ye have filled Jerusalem with your doctrine, and intend to bring this man's blood upon us." Then Peter and the other apostles answered and said, "We ought to obey God rather than men."
Thanks for reading the text this evening. Question number one in our thought and discussion question on page 49 says, what sect was associated with the high priest at this time?
Sadducees.
If you remember in our discussion, it's actually been a few lessons ago now, it was sad, you see, that the Sadducees do not believe in a resurrection. And so in the course of the healing of the lame man, and they had to admit, if they admit the healing, and they had been told or been convinced that the healing was from the one who had the power, which was Jesus Christ, and they saw part of them there who was before Jesus was before in the trial, had seen his sentence and him hanged on a cross. And now he has been resurrected, as some of them were witnesses of this. They would have to deny their belief that there is a resurrection, not that there is not. And so the Sadducees, this was a dilemma for them. And so to have them as part of the group that wants to cancel out the apostles, Peter and wants to cancel him out. Well, here we go. They are trying. They're part of that group because they don't want to change and come over to the truth. The second part of the question is, what does sect mean?
A group of people with somewhat
Okay. What's another word for this you think of? It's, I guess, a stronger word when you look at a Greek. Dictionary is going to use a stronger definition of that. They take it, my understanding is that this carries on the idea of a heresy. It's pretty strong. So whenever you think of, whenever it's referring to someone as a sect, what you said is right. It is a broken, or it is a group or broken off group, or can be a broken off group from a religious piece. But it's pretty strong to think that this could be what they would call a heresy from the Jewish religion. Also, you can think of the Sadducees as just being a group that's chosen to believe something else. That would be a fair definition as well.
The Pharisees, in sharp contrast to them, even though they were very hypocritical, they were the strictest of the sects, of the
Jewish divisions. Of the divisions, yeah.
And they looked down on the Sadducees quite a bit because the Sadducees didn't believe in angel, spirit, resurrection, life hereafter, none of that. And they confessed all of these. They believed in all of these. And this causes a divide later on in the book of Acts, as you know, of course, you know, when Paul's preaching about the resurrection from the dead. But I believe it's in Acts chapter 23, whenever they're, you know, called together. But this shows you that they were a distinctive group, and they did have different teaching than the Orthodox belief, the established belief. And so what Sister Gertie was saying earlier, you know, when it comes to the church, it does parallel with that in that respect. You know, there is the original teaching of the early church, and then there's breakaways from that. That's heresy. That's, you know, things that pull away from that.
Yeah, I mean, we see this, you know, we see things like this all the time. And you know, as you say, we'll see some other groups in the book of Acts. You'll see, you know, the one about Thutis. They said, leave it alone. When they're talking about the Christianity thing, he was like, leave it alone. If it be right, it'll live. If it's not, it's going to die, just like the Thutis group did that followed him. It was just a small group. We'll study that later on. Question number two is why were they filled with indignation or envy? Yeah, that's why they were jealous or had the envy, because he's winning. Something to think about there. Their whole world's being turned upside down. Not only has it been turned upside down religiously, it's being done in open, out in the open, and it's been done with proof that you cannot deny, you can't argue, because it's right there in front of you. And so they're losing. They're losing the battle. So that's just filling them up with indignation. Number three is who delivered the apostles from prison?
Angel of the Lord.
And from the following scriptures, well, before we get into that, did you see the significance of, you have to read a few more verses down, but you see the significance there of what the angel of the Lord actually done for them? Did they get them out of prison without anybody seeing them? Appears they did. When you read the verses below, appears they got them out of there without anybody knowing, not even the jailer. It doesn't say that specifically, but it seems, reading between the lines, that seems to be the case, because they didn't know everything was locked up. People were still guarding it. Yeah. I mean, the guards are there guarding the cell, and it's empty. So, it seems that to me to indicate that they did it. He did it in such a way that nobody else saw it. Nobody else knew what was going on. And there again, more proof. There's something to this. There's something bigger going on here than just some talk about Christ. From the following scriptures, list five other acts of angels in the book of Acts. So Acts 8:26.
Which is in the desert, and he baptized an Ethiopian eunuch
The Gaza Strip. Yeah, it's the same region.
Same region?
Yep.
Okay. I was wondering.
It is. So in verse 26 specifically, what did the angel do? The angel spoke. So, all right. In Acts 10, verse 3, what did the angel do?
Appeared in vision, spoke to Cornelius.
Okay, so the angel was in a vision. A vision there. Acts 12 and verse 7. Okay, what was the appearance of the angel? Light? Well, it was light. He shone, you know, with a light. Acts 12:23.
He also smote Peter in the side.
Yes, I thought about that too. And I thought, well, the next one picks that up. Yeah. Get up, it's time to get out of here. Acts 12 and 23.
Just struck Herod because he didn't give glory to God.
Smote Herod, yep. Struck him, smote him. We talk a little bit about it Wednesday or Sunday night, but just in us standing back there talking, you need to read Josephus' account of that right there, that story. Okay. It's something to read. Because he writes of how it got to this point and then what happened after that point. It's pretty interesting to read how the angel smote him and so forth. Acts 27, verse 23, what do we see angels doing there?
Stood and spoke.
Huh?
Stood and spoke.
Okay, I was thinking a little, since we're trying to pull out characteristics, what was the result of the angel doing that? Encouraged, right? Encouraged them there. So we see angels doing all kinds of different roles here in these passages that give us in the book of Acts. But, I mean, you can go out of Acts and learn a lot more about angels as well. Learn a lot more about what's going on. We know in the Old Testament we read about an angel being, you know, that... like the death angel. He goes and strikes down an army. We see him fighting battles for the Lord. We see the angels... excuse me. We see angels... one time is described as being in a cloud or being a cloud because of the storm. We read angels doing all kinds of different things throughout the Bible, because they're doing what God would want them to do, would have them to do to accomplish His purpose. And so when I think about angels in the book of Acts, I want to think the same way. They are doing things to accomplish God's purpose. They're not working alone. They're not working unto themselves. They're working along with what God would have them to do. That is their purpose, is to serve. Sometime maybe we'll do a deep dive study into angels and what they do. It'd be a good study for us sometime. Any questions or comments before we move on to number four?
It's a good reminder of what Hebrews 1 tells us, that they're ministering spirits sent forth to minister to those who are heirs of salvation. We see how they're doing that a little bit. We get to see behind the curtain of God's revelation every now and then when He reveals that, you know.
Yeah. Well, you know, in that same thing in Hebrews, where he talks about entertaining angels unaware, reporting back to Abraham before Sodom and Gomorrah. They entertained angels, didn't even know it. They were showing hospitality to everyone. I mean, they knew it by the end of the meal, but they didn't know who they were entertaining. They thought they were just men, but they were there, again, to accomplish a purpose. Question number four: why did the angel tell, or what did the angel tell the apostles to do? Verse 20. Yep. Told them to go. The first time I just wrote go and speak, and then I went back and said, "Oh, it says go stand and speak." So I'm not sure about the significance of the word stand there. To me, it would seem to be implied. I should have went back and done a little more study on that, see if there is any significance there. But we also see that whenever someone stands before someone else, it also presents a little bit of authoritative type position, because for standing or sitting and talking, it's not as authoritative. Or for everybody standing, you're standing in a circle, it seems less authoritative. But in this case, I think that may be the significance of stand. Yes, sir.
I don't know whether I guess you could say it was the custom at that time that the person teaching stood, and we remember Paul learned at the feet of Gamaliel. So in other words, the audience or the students sit around the person teaching.
I saw something, the standing before them and the speaking. All right, where next part of the question is, what were they to speak? Excuse me, where were they to speak?
In the temple.
In the temple. What's the significance of that?
Fulfillment of prophecy.
Fulfillment of prophecy.
You know, it talks about how that the word of the Lord would flow forth from Jerusalem. And, of course, it would go out to all nations. But it would begin, the law of the Lord and the word of the Lord would begin in Jerusalem. And so there's significance to that because that's, you know, as the Jews understood it, the place where God's name was hallowed and sanctified. And so it's fitting that they preach the gospel first in the temple, and some of the very first gospel sermons emanated from there and then went out from there.
And two, that's where they, if we remember the tabernacles and things, that's where God's presence was supposed to be.
Yep. And also, I thought of the significance of the people being there to speak is your audience is there because they want to be there.
Yeah, they're already religious. They already believe in Jehovah God. So
yep, you're taking them from where they are, bringing them to the next level. I mean, we do that a lot in evangelism. We take people where they're at and try to bring them to the next spot, the next level. Also, you know, it seems that, as we'll see Paul later on when Saul comes into the picture, later renamed to Paul, we see him going to the Jews, to the temple first, because that's where he finds the Jews, his own people, just to try to convince or to convert first before he goes on to the Gentiles. Maybe I'm putting some emphasis there that's not necessary, but anyway, the second part is, to whom were they to speak?
People,
whoever would listen, whosoever will. This one doesn't seem to indicate that they're talking about a specific race or specific nationality. What were they to speak? The words of this life. Now, I think it's significant that this life is there. The word "this" is there. We're not talking about something else. We're not talking about what the leaders and wanted to hear. We're talking about the way of Christ, the way that they have started to be persecuted for teaching. So I think that's putting this in there, this life, wording it that way is significant.
Jesus said, "I am the way, the truth,
and the
life." And in another passage, "the life everlasting. I am the resurrection and the life." So when he raised up Lazarus in John 11, so there is great significance to this. In him is life. In him was life. And the life was the light of men, and the light shined in the darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not. Did not overtake it, in other words. So this life is the source of our spiritual life. It's the source of our everlasting life. If we turn away from preaching the gospel, what other good news can be preached? Might as well say what Peter said to Jesus: "Lord, where will we go if we turn away from you? You have the words of everlasting life."
Yeah, there's no other source. That, you know, people look other places, they look for different things, but they won't find it. They will not find it. You know, the Bible calls, you know, the faith. It calls it the way. We've seen that several times, of the way. And so I believe this is specifically speaking to the word, you know, the message of Christ. Number five, what were the council and the Senate? The Sanhedrin, the judging body. Number six is, what report did the officers bring back to the council after going to the prison?
Empty.
That, yeah, as we started talking about a minute ago, this makes it more interesting, because they were locked in the prison. The angel comes. It tells us that, didn't it tell us that it was a bright light? Where does it say that at?
What, that he's a
lion? Did I dream that up? I thought it said
no,
it in there.
No, that's in a later passage with Peter getting let go in Acts chapter 12, verse 7.
Okay, you're right. It doesn't say the light in here. I guess I got mixed up with that one up here in
it's
the other question.
Yeah.
So anyway, it wasn't a quiet thing, because I believe they did open the doors, didn't they? And I've lost my verse now. 23. No, I wanted to go up before that about the angel.
19.
But the angel of the Lord by night opened the prison doors and brought them forth. This was not done. This doesn't seem to be done in a hidden way. And I'm thinking, if it's doors like I got some in my house, you heard them things open. They was probably creaking, but not, that might not be the case. But either way, the doors were opened. They walked out. Now we see in verse 23, they're still guarding the empty place. The prison seems to be sure. I believe it said that it was safely shut. The prison was shut with safety, and the keepers or the guards were at the doors, and there was no man within. And then we have the verse that says they opened the doors and came out. So wonder what happened there. I mean, this would be speculation. It's like, did they go to sleep? It just seems there's something miraculous going on here with them getting out, besides the angel, with the people in the prison as well, because none of them seem to have knowledge that they were gone.
Well, there are some occasions in the Old Testament where God did this, and it doesn't specifically say in the passage where, like, David went among Saul and his men when Saul was trying to pursue after David and kill him. He went and took a piece of his skirt, you know, and took one of his weapons to let him know, hey, I've been among you. I could have killed you, but I'll let you go, kind of thing. But it mentions that God had caused a deep sleep to fall upon Saul and his men. You know, an angel could have been used for that purpose. I don't know, but it doesn't say there. But the interesting thing about it is, it wouldn't have mattered if they were awake. Because if they were awake, they would have fell down like dead men. They couldn't have done anything to stop the angel from what he was doing. But at the same time, it's clear that they didn't get to see it, because they were probably sleeping because they knew the prison was secured.
So yeah, they had no worries.
Yeah, no worries at all. if anybody did come breaking in, they would have assumed they would have heard them, the bars and the door open and creaking, and you know, and all.
Well,
that noise that's not a comfort.
But also, you know, you think of it in another light too, that if they'd been called asleep, somebody had been fired or killed.
Oh yeah, I mean,
somebody would have been, you know, they'd fallen asleep on the job or anything like that. They would have been killed. And by saying the word safely there, that makes me think they had somebody that was monitoring the situation besides the guards. Because, you know, probably multiple layers. Either way, they got out of there. They walked out.
This is just speculation. But if they had caused the wall to fall down or a hole to come into prison, then they could always say that there was a group came
It's definitely something significant in the story.
Supernatural powers.
Supernatural powers. The next part of the question is, what was the effect on the rulers?
They didn't hear the people.
They were concerned about what this would do. They're like, how is this going to turn out? What's this going to grow into? You know. It's like,
yeah,
we locked them up and now they're escaped. You know.
Yeah, they were wondering what it would grow to. If you look at verse 24, it says, and now when the cap, I'm going to read from a different translation, and now when the captain of the temple and of the chief priests heard these words, they were greatly perplexed about them and wondering what this would come to. To me, this is a little easier to understand from this translation than the King James. It's like, what's going on? Notice that it talked about being questioning or being perplexed about their work. There's concern. It's like, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? Question number 7 is, how does what the apostles were doing and the manner in which they were doing it furnish unmistakable evidence of class teaching or division in the first century? That's a mouthful. I was hoping y'all have some good, clever answers, because I struggled with this in a little bit.
How does what the apostles were doing and the manner in which they were doing it furnish unmistakable evidence of class teaching or division in the first century?
Well, you have to remember the apostles were common men. They hadn't been educated.
I think this is what the discussion or part of this question is. As I was thinking about it, and I thought, well, now you have the upper class or the ruling class and being told or telling the lower class to be quiet. The upper telling the lower to be quiet. Shut up about this. Don't be talking about it. Because like you were saying, a lot of the apostles, they were just common people. They had some of them had common jobs, not all of them, but most of them had common jobs. You know, Peter, James, and John were fishermen. And last Saturday night, I believe it was, I was reading something, and I don't know how I'd missed this, I believe it's in Luke's account. It mentions that they were business partners. I'd read over that before and thought that because one had one boat, one had the other, and they worked together. And I believe it's Luke's account about where Jesus gets on Peter's boat, says, take me out a little bit. And then he teaches the people, and then he tells them to throw the net out on the other side. And all four of them are there, and there's two boats, and they're mending their nets or cleaning their nets. And then he tells them to go out there and throw the net off. And then they pull the draw to fishes, and it just about sinks the boat. And they get the call for the second boat for Peter and John, or James and John. And they come out there, and they just about sink that boat too, full of fish. And they said, Lord, and how'd they start that? Lord, we've been fishing all night. And I was like, that's my kind of fisherman. We kind of do that sometimes, fish all day or all night and don't catch anything. Anyway, I guess that's a side step, but they were common people, and I had the rulers looking down on them saying, you got to be quiet about this. Question number 8 is, how were the apostles brought back before the council?
Without violence.
Peacefully, without violence. Why do you think so? They were afraid of the people.
They may have thought they were better than them, and they may have thought they should be the ones teaching and, you know, leading the people, but they were scared to death of the common man rising up and taking them down.
too, which goes along with what Tim was saying, is that if it was just some man's doctrine, then it would soon go away. But it was God, there wasn't a thing they could do with
it. Yeah, can't fight against it. Might try, but you're not going to win. Interesting to see the people. They feared the people greatly. Had great fear. Pulled too many pages. But what were they afraid the people would do to them? Stone them. I thought that was an interesting detail there. They were afraid they would stone them. Next page. Go ahead. Yep. There've been several instances over time where the leaders were afraid of the people temporarily. Question number 9 on page number 50. What charge did the council say they had given the apostles?
Not teaching the name of Christ.
Yep, not to speak in this name, the name of Christ. With what had the apostles filled Jerusalem? The doctrine of Christ. So they're saying, don't speak, and next thing you know, it spread like wildfire. It has gone everywhere. It's all over Jerusalem, and that's a good thing. We like to see things like that happen. I can think of an instance of the time that I have traveled back and forth to Tanzania, Africa. Reason I guess speak so much about that one because I have a better witness of that because I've been there more times than some of the other places. But over time, I've seen the influence of Christianity. When I first started going over there, I don't know if you've ever been in a situation where they do the prayer what, 4 or 5 times a day, 4 a.m. because they're doing it before daylight, after daylight. And they get on the loudspeakers and they sing from the Quran. It's not a read. It is a reading, but they do it in song. So they do this for, it seems like, forever. And the first time I heard that, I was up just about standing on my feet before I was awake. First time I heard that. Well, I've seen that go from doing that to not doing that, from being 2/3 Muslim religion, down to half, down to about 30%. And Christian religion's taken over because of people believing. And it's changing. It's changing a lot of the ways of life. Now those loudspeaker prayers and all that doesn't happen anymore in that city. But because of the influence of Christianity, because of the influence of Christ. I could also speak of some other good things that's happened to that country because of Christian influence. One of them being the belief in God, but second, the value of life has gotten higher because those other Eastern world religions don't value life when you study them. Third thing that I saw that Christianity brought a positive thing to them is now more people are modestly clothed. Are modestly clothed. Some of the tribal life of some of those folks, they walked around 2/3 naked. Didn't see anything wrong with it. You start to see that cultural shift. All because Jesus was brought to that area of the world. And another thing was the effects of communism. It's all but disappeared. It took a generation to die off, I understand that, plus. But people sitting around with nothing to do, expecting to be told what to do or handed something, now work. And I do believe that is the effect of bringing Jesus to those people. The effect of Christianity has a very positive effect on the environment. Question number 10 is, when is it scriptural and right to disobey civil authorities?
In order to obey God.
Obey God.
Yep. Verse 29, where they give the response. They said, we ought to obey God rather than men. And that ought to be our case always. We'll see throughout the book of Acts, not only in this case, we've already seen it once, we'll see it again, and we'll see it again, we'll see it probably four or five times, of where it gets them in trouble for civil disobedience because they are following God rather than the ways of man. We know, you know, we saw this whenever we look at Daniel in the Old Testament, got him thrown in prison because he went the ways of God instead of the ways of man. He would not worship the emperor as the emperor had, or the law had demanded of them. And it caused him to be thrown into the lion's den. We need to be thinking in these terms. We may have to sacrifice ourselves someday because of civil disobedience because we're following God, not the government. God's law always supersedes. I know we talked a lot about this probably about a year ago, it seems, from the pulpit. But we used to teach this in the church. It was common knowledge. You obey God over man's law. Man's law, you follow it, even if you don't agree with it. That's what Romans teaches us. But then whenever it crosses over into God's territory, God's law supersedes it. We always do what God says over what man says. And part of obeying God is obey the law of man, but at the same time, it's not to disobey God. Seemed like in the last year or so, we've kind of forgot that. It's like that's been thrown to the wayside. Well, the government said we shouldn't do this. This official said we shouldn't, you know, do this, and so we're not going to do it. And it's like, why can't we be like the apostles? They, you know, these people in Canada that's being thrown in jail, well, actually it happened here in this country a few times, just not as much as in Canada, for preaching, singing, for preaching against social sins. You know, the one that happened last week because they read directly from the scriptures of the Bible and that was considered hate speech, they threw them in prison for it. And they're still there. They hadn't got out yet. Then all the preachers that they have put in jail because they had services whenever the state said, you don't have services. And so we hope we never see that in this country, but it's not out of the realm of a possibility that it could happen here. As the government, I know they have a different form of government than we do. They seem to think they're more of an authoritarian type government than ours, but it could change here. It could change and change quick.
What country?
Canada.
Oh, Canada?
Yeah, they've jailed a whole bunch of people for meeting for having church services during COVID.
It went so far as if you flew into heaven, you had to be isolated for so many days, and you had to pay for a hotel.
Yes, so you pay more money. We have, you know, at the office, we have done a lot to purposefully not fly through Canada because of all this. Because they make you, they're a little bit, they're different in some countries. You can't cross over through their airports, international airports, without checking into the country. That's a little bit odd because most countries don't make you do that unless you leave the airport. They don't do that in Canada. So that means you got to get a visa, whole shooting match just to walk through the airport, just like you were walking across the countryside. But anyway, they're a little different in several things. But anyway, I didn't mean to go down that road too far. But, you know, we got to decide what are we going to do if we end up in a situation like they did. They said, don't speak. In today's terms, it'd be, this is hate speech. That's the way it's going to be termed. It's going to be hate speech. There, they invited it as hate speech for them because it went against what they believed. Even though they saw with their eyes, touched with their hands, and heard the words. I think sometimes need to not overlook the part of where they actually, when I say touch with their hands, they were eyewitnesses. witnesses there. Some of them were at the trial of Christ, and they still refused and still would not believe. Mm-hmm. They are. And if they get the right balance of power in there, it will happen. It's just not there at the moment. Is any comments or questions? If not, I think we'll stop here at this question. Because I think we'll pick up with number 11 and try to finish the lesson next week.